This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say. What's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kickoff, you can get it just in time for half time, but I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery free and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Johnson puts it in the air. Aidan Flegg wins the
goal. It's still with Lee Gregory. He's in the box. Tries to screw him. Is it going to be there? Yeah. Yes! Oh my God!
The Wednesday Week.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to a very special episode once again of Owls Alumni from the Wednesday Week podcast. Tonight, joining me, I've got Stevie and Holly, and you can see him there, somebody that I didn't want to be on the same screen as because of his chisel good looks. It's Mr. David Putton joining us tonight. So here he is. Here he is. Look at that. Look at him. Look at him. I've had to go to Turkey to get teeth like this, and he's just managed to shave in a jawline. What kind of BS is this? But, well, welcome to the show. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate your time. This is the type of thing we just get straight into. Let's just get into it. So, was it Nottingham you grew up around before you started your career? Is that?
No, not Yorkshireman. Come on. None of that Notts rubbish. First, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. It's one that I've listened to before. And as we were discussing just before we started recording, there's a lot of podcasts to get through, aren't there? So to be able to kind of narrow it down and listen to ones that you really enjoy is a real pleasure. Born and bred in Hull. Mm-hmm. I was 16. Left school at 16 to go to Forest. And it was the kind of era of Jermaine Genus. God knows what's happened to him. You never hear about him anymore, do you?
No.
I think he's fallen off the face of the earth. Michael Dawson, Andy Reid, people like that.
Ricky Stimica would have been around then as well, wouldn't
Ricky,
he?
What a lovely fella he was as well. A good older pro. I say older pro because as a younger pro, you feel like the fellas that have wives and stuff are about 50. Mm-hmm. But he was just lovely, really, really nice. And he was a lovely fellow. Chris Park Williams, God rest his soul, another lovely teammate that was always on you. I mean, I know he's a Wednesday favourite as well, but Bart was a fantastic footballer. But my God, he gave you so much earache about not being good. But then the more I think about it, there's more those kind of Wednesday undertones. So then Big Ron comes in off the back of Dave Bassett moving on. The wrong dugout. Came striding out the long coat, wrong dugout. I used to clean his boots. He had probably what I think was the actual prototype of the Predator, the ones that Craig Johnson invented, which were about yay big and about, I don't know, at least half a stone heavy. So he was tearing around with that. Callum Palmer came in, John Harkes came in. So maybe that path towards Wednesday over a decade later was set in stone by hanging around at Forest when we got all the Wednesday rejects.
Yeah,
that took us down, but not me casting aspersions on their ability.
Now, I tell you what, listen, there's, and I'm going to get it out of the way early because I know now you've mentioned Big Ron, I'm going to have to mention this straight away. We've had a lot of players on this show where We've spoken about Big Ron and his time at Sheffield Wednesday and the players that played for him. Mm. And sometimes everybody talks about his man management, and other times people talk about wanting to knack him in training. Now, right. Apparently at the end of training, he used to put on a bin bag or something and then want to play up front in the small-sided game at the end of training. And there's this big story about Nigel Pearson wanting to kick him into Rosehead and all the rest of it. Did he do that? I mean, he was knocking on a bit by the time he got to the Tricky Trees, wasn't he?
It would have been. And he also... He either wore a cap or his hair was always immaculate. You never saw the middle part. So whether that came with the cap or whether that came as a separate bag, I genuinely don't know. There was a story that I'd heard about, I think Alan Rogers regales it, about it starting to rain down at the training ground and him getting everyone under the tree. God knows why. Maybe he shrinks in the rain. Maybe that's what it is.
When you use as much Brill Cream as Ron Atkinson, I think he's like Darth Vader. When he takes his hat off, his hair comes with it, and then he puts his hair back on. You know,
and starts gasping for breath.
Yeah.
But he bowled in and he was properly larger than life, and yeah, bless him, he bounced in and bounced out. And then David Platt came in after that, and it was a pleasure. I mean, watched him at Italian 90, as a lot of people of our generation would have done. Sorry, Holly, if I've aged you there. But that sense of him taking over, giving people like me a chance, which was great. And then he was there for a little bit, so it was player manager, which had the surreal experience of playing in midfield with David Platt. He probably looking around thinking, Christ, has it come to this? looking around at all these players after being in Sampdoria and Lazio. Not Lazio, Bari. And then he moved on. Paul Hart came in, again, part of the Wednesday connection, and just set all the young lads free. We had a wonderful period of time together, which culminated in a playoff semi-final, which I had left in the January to go to Southampton before then. But it was just great. It was pre-camera phones. It was pre too much opinion on football. And we were just a good bunch of young lads that did pre our podcasts. Bit. Exactly. I mean, they're everywhere, which is great because I'm on them, which is lovely. And I've got a couple myself. But it was just a real sense of togetherness. The older pros were really good pros. Jimmy Brennan, David Johnson, Malin Harewood, Ricky Shimica, as you say. Dave Besant was there. Just so many wonderful people. Mark Crosley, another one. Lovely, lovely people that were great to us as younger players. And then as careers broaden out and grow and disband, moved on to different things, unfortunately, and didn't quite get to where they needed to go. But, I mean, they put that right, 20 years later, just a couple of seasons ago, didn't they?
Absolutely. I tell you what, because I tell you what it is, that period of time where you were at Nottingham Forest was a time when we got spanked 4-1 at the City Ground. And it's the first and only time I've ever sat in the away end, because a couple of my mates were Forest fans. And they said, come on, Fudge. I was working in Skegness at the time. So we got in the car, we drove over, and God, it was the worst day out I've ever had in my life. And, you know, I got some good-natured ribbing from the from the Forest faithful. But then time went on, you moved down to Southampton, and we were talking just off camera there about all the venues that I've worked in Southampton that I know you've been in.
Yeah.
And, you know,
all above board, all respectable establishments, we said. Didn't we?
Well, I did have to throw you out. So, you know what I mean? That's a good start.
I would have been asking for it. I'll be brutally honest.
You would have been at the time, yeah. Because that leads me on to a beautiful segue. You're talking about the Sheffield Wednesday connection, and we've got a connection there in players what have played for Sheffield Wednesday that pushed the referee over and got lengthy bans. So, you know, there's all in there. I mean, do you look back on that and think, oh, good Lord, Prutz. Like you know, you were known as a hard battling midfielder, but that one lost your bloody mind.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Dan, you've sentence you've just used is literally that member before it, a member after it, a bit in the middle. Not at all. Just proper, the kind of red mist that, I mean, hopefully you don't find yourself in that position in kind of public and I don't know, something's gone terribly wrong. We go, what on earth just happened? But yeah, and there was, I mean, looking back, there is a sizable kind of chasm in the middle of before that and after that, because understandably, as a potential employee, come away from being a footballer. People are looking at you as if to say, well, can we trust him? Is he going to do this? Is he going to repeat that type of thing? And there was a lot of focus on it. And again, like I said about perhaps the media with football now is it's just amplified so much. And it felt pretty intense then, when you're reading papers and being on Sky, apologising to every man on his... I'm sorry for offending you. I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry for that. And then, given obviously the time of year that we're at in the season, I got a 10-game ban with an 11-game season left. So 10 games out, training like an idiot, trying to keep fit. Last game of the season, Survival Sunday for Southampton, Man United at home.
Brilliant.
And I started. She's like, brilliant. Half an hour in, I'm going...
So who are you marking that day then? Who are you marking?
Well, no one from the looks of it, because we were crap. So I didn't get near anybody at all. Bless him, Harry Redknapp was in charge. It was always lovely with me, Harry. I mean, very much. His best attributes are with better players. And I mean that with the greatest respect, because he must have just looked at us and thought, oh my God, we've got no chat. Which I think he actually might have said in the press about 3 weeks into the job, thinking, no, we're not going to stay up. Cheers for that, Harry. Let's crack on, see what happens. And it was, the Di Canio one always comes up. And there was, I remember, so my son's 12 now. So the day of Aguero scoring the goal, which took the roof off the Etihad and gave Man City the title. Obviously, there's a part of that game which involves a certain Joey Barton going bananas and getting sent off. And then there was this whole kind of debate about what he might get as a ban. And then suddenly your name comes up, not in a good way. Your name comes up as people that have been banned for a long period of time. So I'm then feeding my son thinking, Christ, this is it, isn't it? This is what is on, this is what's on the,
this is my legacy. You know,
this is the notes on the career. I mean, forget Colchester, forget Sunderland.
Yeah.
I mean, and please forget them because they were terrible. But that does kind of routinely come up. And then clubs that I went to afterwards, that would be the first question. They'd be like, you're right, how are we doing? What were you doing? Okay, let's go again. Let's start at the top. This is what happened. This is what happened. But the irony now, I do a lot of work when covering games and speak to referees a lot and work a lot with referees. And Alan Wiley, the referee that was at the epicenter of that, is someone I can text right now and ask a question about refereeing decisions to. No harm, no foul. It's the actions of a younger, sillier man. And now I'm just an older, sillier man.
I mean, so I don't want to skip a huge chunk, obviously, but we'll come back.
You can
to that.
Do. You can go fast forward the crap bits. Feel free.
You kind of touched on it a little bit, but do you feel like that affected your move into the media? Like, did you feel that that might have been a sticking point? Or do you feel like it helped you in some weird way?
Do you know what? I never actually thought about it in those terms. It was always a good icebreaker with kind of... Because then, I mean, and the only way you can approach that is by, obviously at the time, it was the most important thing that you'd ever been involved in and very, very serious. And you go, the thing is, you go to the FA in what I think it was in Soho Square. I don't know if it's changed now. But you get, you sit and get a proper bollocking, for want of a better word, by regional FA members, collective age of about 400. And you've just got to sit there and nod and go, sorry, really sorry. Can't change it, and I'm still sorry for doing it. Can we? And you do that, and it moves on. But then, as you get older, I think it fits in, because I have been commentating on games with commentators, and the commentators are great because they are the first ones to take the piss and be very, just to make you feel comfortable. So there's me going to town on someone for going bonkers on the pitch, and I'm just getting nudged by the commentator going, and then you've got to say it and leave it out there hanging enough. For them to say, obviously, some very, very funny quip, and you've got to, not tongue in cheek, but it's got to be very, very knowing. I mean, I'm not saying for 1 second someone's listening to a commentary. So it was, one of them was on an MLS game, which gets beamed out in the middle of the night. It's probably only students and people that are climbing the walls are listening to it. And
people have been a reflex in Southampton.
People have been a reflex on the way home. Yeah, they've got the kebab from London Road. They're on the way back and ready to watch a bit of football. And so you can't be too kind of knowingly saying it, because a lot of people it's just a voice on a football match. But for people that might make the connection going, is he for real caning the fella on the pitch for doing that? So you try and put it in some form of context and some form of empathy going, well, he's done that. He'll be really sorry about that in the morning. And,
he's got to go to Soho Square next week.
To get a real rap of the knuckles by men that have never been anywhere near a football pitch and just nod and doff your cap and just say, sorry. So I think it's part of experience. I think it's part of being able to kind of touch base with people, because there's not many things that we would talk about during covering games that I haven't come across. And given, again, this time of year, done a couple of bits on Sky Sports News, which obviously is a big part of the corporation that I work for. And it's funny, there's almost a default setting from the presenters going, well, you know, must know what it's like to be fighting for survival. I'm like, why did you never think that I was anywhere near promotion? Because you would be absolutely right. But why are on the side of me being in a team that was crap? Just because I was part of it.
Well, yeah. We're kind of straight. I mentioned Skegness earlier on. I've still got the record for the worst disciplinary record, biggest fine in the Lincolnshire League from 2000 to 2002.
How much?
So it cost me £360, and that was Saturday afternoon level.
Jesus, that's, and I don't mean this condescending at all, Dan. That's some going for that level.
Yeah,
Jesus.
I got 5 red cards and 6 bookings in one season. I was a battler. What can I say? I was the enforcer.
Mine averages out at, so I first professional game at 18, last professional game at 32. I got a red card a season, and I got 99 yellow cards. And I can't tell you how much that sticks my craw that I didn't get to 100.
I think that'd be like number one with a bullet. But listen, I've spoken a lot. Stevie, have you got anything to add before I get to Sheffield Wednesday?
I was just going to go straight into Sheffield Wednesday, if that was all right.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's do it. So you played for some team in West Yorkshire that nobody really wants to talk about.
Yeah, we're going to bypass the Leeds era. I'll get straight past that. We don't need to go there. How did it all come about then, signing for Wednesday?
I was at Swindon. So I elected to join Swindon after being at Colchester because Jonathan Douglas, David Lucas and Alan Sheehan, 3 former Leeds players, sorry for mentioning Leeds, they got there and they had a good season. And in that summer, I'd elected to join Swindon off the back of having an option at Brentford and Brighton. So Brighton under Gus Poyet, who subsequently passed their way to the League One title by a country mile. I was at Swindon and we got relegated, but we played at Hillsborough. So a couple of games before the end of the season. And without being too kind of mercenary, I knew that there was a bit of a platform there and a bit of a stage to not be crap. So subsequently tried like a bear, had a really good go at it. And Neil Thompson, who was at Leeds as a coach, was then at Wednesday. Mm-hmm. This is how this works, you know, when you get to my stage. So the original agent that I had, Neil Fewins, very famous agent now. One of the last couple of deals was Virgil van Dijk from Southampton to Liverpool. So me and him hanging around in the late 90s. Then fast forward, he's moving Virgil for £80 million. So when I'm going...
Virgil van Dijk didn't go to Pop World.
Exactly. I mean, he'd be too cool for that one. Apparently, he smells amazing. I've obviously never got anywhere near him, which is probably helpful from his point of view. So by the time I'm kind of kicking around in a team that's just been relegated from League One, like Neil, they must have changed his number. So you're kind of kicking around trying to work out where you're going to go. And so I kind of got wind through Neil that Wednesday and Gary Megson might be interested. So we went off on holiday. So I booked this place. So daughter was only little, and my wife was pregnant, very heavily pregnant with our son. So daughter's 14 now. So if you look, I mean, fast forwarding a bit. That's when we managed to beat Borough on the final day and stay up. So that's how dinky my mob were. Yeah. And by the way, terrified of the fella that dresses up as the owl, person too.
Hey, we're not allowed to say that.
Scary voice.
It's got a scary voice.
Knackered to see now. Look.
We'll
you don't have to cut any of this out. Keep it all in. It's very homely and it's nice. Got wind of that, and we were on, so in this place which I'd booked, which turned out to be a dump. And it was so not childproof. It was a joke, like really really deep pool, no railing around, nothing, just But they go, Christ. But then got wind that Wednesday were interested. So then I flew back, went to Sheffield, met up with the doctor, did a medical. Gary Megson turned up to where the medical was going. So I'm there, shoulder length barney, a bit of a beard. And he went, bloody hell. I thought you'd at least get a haircut. I'm like, come on. I'm not going to stand up for the way I play football, but the Barnet, come on, we're keeping that part. And he was, and that was it. So got it all sorted. There was a bit of, I think, Swindon, because it all gone so mightily tits up. They were kind of like, anyone that wants to get jettisoned, see you bye. I know that Paolo Di Canio came in afterwards and kind of caned a few of us for being bad eggs in the dressing room. It wasn't. We were just crap. We were just comprehensively crap across the board. No team spirit. No direction. Nothing. We were just terrible and deservedly got relegated. And then rocked up at Wednesday and then finished the holiday, came back. First day of pre-season. Gary's there. Chris Evans is there. Neil's there. Andy Rhodes is there. And just a really good bunch of people, and I'd heard stories about Mega and what it was like, and it was exactly like all the stories, which which was both fascinating and probably and by weird. That age I wasn't scared of it, because it was just one of those, and as you can imagine, I've been called every name under the sun, so it's fine. So mm-hmm. when you get called a certain thing several times, it's like, is that my nickname? Because it's really quite offensive, but because it's football, it's okay. And you call everyone else it as well, so I think we're going to be all right with it. But my one abiding memory of that pre-season is went up to Grenaside to go running through Grenaside, which is lovely to walk through, to run through. It's awful. It's disgusting. Up, down. And we'd gone up in two bus loads, and Mega had kind of half joined us. We'd done whatever we needed to do, got back in the bus, come back, baking up. So we're kind of meandering back down one of the country roads, and someone's gone, has anyone seen where the boss went? And we're all like, we do not give a shit. Let's get out of here. Leave him to it. He can find his own way out. He comes bursting out of a hedge, red face, panting. Yeah, effing budget, okay. And like, quick, driving him. Was like, whoa, is he blood? And by the way, we paid for that by the time we got back to the training ground. But it was brilliant. Yeah. It was just funny. Looking back on it now, he was probably raging. But it was just great. It was that sense of being able to go to, after having been, and I don't say this with any sense of entitlement at all, but Nottingham Forest, Southampton, back to Forest, to Leeds, came out of Leeds to go to Colchester, went from Colchester to Swindon, and again, enjoyed parts of my time at Colchester and Swindon. Off the field at Swindon was brilliant, had a wonderful social circle, loved living in Cheltenham where we lived. It was gorgeous, really nice, really lovely period of time of life. But it was kind of Wednesday interested, right, see, I'm off. Do not mm-hmm. give two monkeys about what you lot think. I'm off to go and play for a big football club again. See you, bye. And
I was going to ask that. Did you feel like after Leeds, you were starting to wind down? What would you have been now, 27, 28? And you thought, well, I can start winding it down. And you went to clubs such as Colchester and Swindon.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday kind of gave you an upward trajectory a little bit in terms of size of club, no disrespect.
No, and I don't think it is. It's not disrespectful at all. It was, and living and growing up in Yorkshire, so goals on Sunday was always my go-to. So you'd watch Hull City, where I was from. You'd see, obviously, both Sheffield clubs. Sorry for mentioning the red side of it. We won't mention those again. You had Leeds, you had Bradford, Grimsby Town were on it. I think even Lincoln City might have crept into that as well. Mm-hmm. So it was always the big football clubs that you wanted to be associated with. And then that happens. Pre-season was one that threw me, because we would have gone to Austria. And you go to Austria, and I think I met Tango. Jesus.
Wow.
He comes walking off. I don't even think it was that warm to have his top off, but he still had his top off, which you can think better. But it reminded me of being on tour with teams that I've been at in the past. Just lots of people, because they've got lots of fans, because it's a big football club. So why wouldn't there be loads of people watching a crap friendly game in Austria? Well, because it's Sheffield Wednesday and lots of people follow them. That's why. And then you go to first game of the season, which would have been Rochdale. And you come running out and you go, Jesus Christ, there's loads of people. And I don't mean that in a stupidly surprised way, because I remember watching Wednesday in cup finals in the Premier League with the big players that come through and just kind of going, oh Christ, yeah, it's still really, really big. And that's that was a motivating, without it being an ego thing, it was back to being at a big club. There's no other way of saying it. And like I said, I know people at Colchester, I know people at Swindon. I went to Scunny on loan, didn't I? But you can say those things without it being a stick to beat other clubs with, because I grew up with and watching huge football clubs such as our lovely Yorkshire-based ones.
But just on that then, you're talking about that period and the size of the club and everything else. It wasn't a great period, obviously, as you just alluded to.
Oh, no,
to
be, no.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? We'd come down, we'd been in the lower reaches of a League One, and then they'd almost been sort of a reset, hadn't they, that pre-season. New lads have been brought in. They've been a bit of an overhaul sort of thing. What were the expectations that pre-season? Can you remember what sort of messages were given? Did Megson say, right, championship, we're going to win it? Or
it would have been leaning on promotion, whether that was via the playoffs or via it being automatic. Because I don't think, and having kind of covered teams and watched teams, I mean, look at Derby just getting themselves back up. Pompey, how long have they been in League One? It's Leeds spent a bit of time fanning around there as well. It's not an easy league to get out of, which sounds very much like a bit of a soundbite and a bit of a cliche, but it's true. It's tough. And every team that came to Wednesday, take me at Swindon, I'm off to go. We're playing Wednesday today at Hillsborough. Sorry, but this is my time to shine. I'm doing as much as I possibly can. It's a proper stage to play football. That absolutely was the remit. And I know there was a bit of tension as it manifested itself, didn't it, as we moved through that particular season with the owner and chairman and Gary. Because you go from a derby against Sheffield United to him, what, less than 2 weeks afterward being moved on, or him saying, I've had enough, see you later.
That was that was his last game, wasn't it?
It was. I remember rightly. Vivid memory of him beating his chest with the badge.
Yeah,
and that happens a lot nowadays. But the fact that his old man is part of the Wednesday firmament, he is. He's from Sheffield. Lives in I think he's still in Dorwell at the posh bit of Sheffield, isn't he? Obviously doing well.
Never used to be. When did that happen? I've been out of Sheffield for a while now. When did Dorwell become posh? When did they gentrify that? We used to play at Pitts on a Saturday against a team called Dorwell Park Rangers, and it always ended up in a tear-up.
What it'll be, Dan, is because they've gentrified Ecky Road. So by the time you get to the very top, past all the really posh bars now, that's why you end up staggering to the top of there and being where you need to be. So Mego would have made us absolutely aware of what that was. And it was... I mean, terms like sleeping giant and huge football club, massive, obviously that's the word that's chucked around, isn't it? And it was a stick to beat Wednesday within that division. And quite rightly so, because it shouldn't have been anywhere near that. But our job for that bit, as this kind of band of a ragtag mob misfits. Put together. Misfits is the best way to put it. Misfits is a great way to put it. Was to get them up and out. And it's funny, I was at Preston Leicester last night, sat with Ryan Lowe after the game. So we seemingly played teams who play, and Chris Lyons at Bristol Rovers played well, bought him, played against Bury, Lowe played well, bought him. Chris O'Grady comes in, big Rob Jones comes in, Sedge is already there, Nicky Weaver's there, Stephen Bywater comes in, Clinton's still there, JJ's there. And the more you rattle it off, the more you think, Christ, that was a pretty good team and should have done what it did. But it was built with real characters. So, I mean, so many games of that season stand out. We were down at Stevenage and we got dicked. I mean, properly smashed. I think it was 5-1 by the end of it. The Graham Wesley Stevenage. And
that was an awful day.
On the pitch going, I mean, aren't these a non-league team? What are we doing? And just the way that Wesley set him up, and I've worked with Graham since, he's the only man that sent me a text message about team news, which you click on it and you go, how have you made it that this is like a book? It's like, Jesus Christ, flicking through it. And so me and Big Jonah were getting into it at half-time. As a central midfielder, I'm blaming the defence for being too deep. The defence is blaming the midfield for leaving him on their own.
Yep.
Big sod, get on with it. So me and him were going at each other. Mago came steaming and he went, well, you can both shut the fuck up. Like, you're both shit coming off. Dragged us both at half time, which kills the argument. You're like, oh, well, it doesn't matter now, does it? Because I can't do anything about it. It's just sat there like that. And I remember he went to town on Clinton after it as well, because he was a very big fan of Gary Medine, was Gary Megson. And Gaz ended up scoring along with Niall Ranger coming in laterally, scoring goals that did Wednesday a hell of a lot of good. But to class Gaz as a bit of a rogue, I think, is a very nice way of putting it.
We normally go with mad as a fish in petrol. Yes. We normally go with Gary.
But sometimes his warm down was getting changed at the ground and walking up to the sandwich shop just up the hill. And we're all kind of, where's my Dean? He's having a bacon and egg sandwich down there. And you know, Omega being kind of drill side, he's all right. I mean, but you didn't mind because he was a good kid, but, and he'd be kind of smirking in the corner, obviously getting away with daylight robbery, just giggling away. But it was just a great mixture of characters. I mean, players that had played at different levels. I mean, look at what Weaver had done before being there. He played for some big football clubs. You could look at me and say, played in the Premier League as a younger man. Why are you in League One? Discipline, not consistent enough. Potentially playing out of his skin to play in the Premier League, finding a level in the Champ and maybe below. And Clinton, former international footballer. You know, JJ, the same thing. So there's a real kind of melting pot of lads. It's funny because in different dressing rooms, you can kind of sit there and think, glad to not see you again. Glad to not see you again. Glad to see you. But in the Wednesday one, all of them to a man, if I bumped into any of them now, like I said, chatting to Lowy last night, and you can imagine Lowy, talking the hand legs off a donkey. I was in there last year, Preston against Burnley. I think it was a draw. So I've gone into the manager's room afterwards. As a bit of a tangent. And Lowy's holding court with Vincent Kompany and Craig Bellamy going. And he's, and you know what? And this and that. And the talking tax. I'm thinking, Lowy, that's Vincent Kompany. He's chewing his ear off, man. Know your audit. Bold as brass. And that's what made him the very good player that he was. So, yeah, that first season was was, when you look back at it, you think retrospectively, such an eye-opener and such a great experience. And obviously, everywhere Wednesday went, it was either majority at Hillsborough or the majority on the road. That was just always the case. You know what I mean? Wherever you went, it was like, we're all Wednesday, aren't we? Yeah, well, two-thirds of this ground's Wednesday. And at home, three-quarters of the ground's Wednesday. That's just the way it was.
Was it in that first season that you scored that goal against Rochdale?
That was literally the first game, which set such unrealistic expectations and standards.
We thought we'd sign Lionel bloody Messi at this point. We thought we've got a bloody player here. He's come from Leeds, ridiculous. He's come from Saints. And look at him now, he's scoring, scorches, scorches.
Left foot. I mean, that 100 times out of 101 times that had gone over the cop, it had been out on the main road. The biggest thing that I remember about that is, so the end of season awards do, Chris O'Grady won goal of the season for his header against Sheffield United. And I'm probably a few too many wines in going, are you joking? I mean, I understand where it stands in the firmament of what dynamics in Sheffield football are, but are you joking? Seriously, that was one in a million. And Chris being what he was, which was a very imposing presence, but just oddly not the personality with it. I'm not saying he was boring, but he was pretty boring. So he was kind of looking at me going, yeah, and I was like, no, seriously, this is an injustice. A bit like Nottingham Forest talking about refereeing decisions. I was saying, this is an injustice. Can you sort this out? So yeah, Holly, that was it. Yeah, came out, swung at it. I think Samida may have jumped on my back, the big muscly sod that he was. And then Mego sat there afterwards, kind of, oh, I'm very happy that I put this midfield together. I think I'd managed to play myself out of the team about three games later.
What was Samido like?
Brilliant, lovely fella, really lovely.
We all know away days are mint, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now with the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. For more information, see mcdonalds.com. See you later.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Three for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. Beyond the pitch, beyond the results, we're here to connect fans, getting them to embrace the highs and lows of supporting your club. Because we're not just fans, we're a team. With 2 in 3 football fans having struggled with their mental health, we understand that life off the pitch can present its own challenges. That's why we're committed to ensuring you have the tools to stay connected with your friends and fellow supporters. Take a moment to connect with your mates. A simple text or an open conversation can make a world of difference. And if they don't respond right away, don't hesitate to follow up. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Fella, it's heartbreaking to think potentially, obviously, what life's thrown at him in recent years. Just lovely. I'd known of him at Charlton a little bit. Very much that the kind of overseas player that's got a really, he's got a decent grasp on English, but the nuances, like I said, you've got you've got different Scouser in Lowy, you've got me from Yorkshire, you've got
Gary Medine,
Christ, you've got Weaver, Jonah from the Northeast. You'd be forgiven for sat there thinking, are you sure you're all from the same island? Because none of you sound like you're from the same place at all. But just chucked himself into it all. Unbelievably fit. I mean, in ridiculous shape. Just a good player. Just a nice fella. Really nice fella. Like I said, you can come across some teammates where you go, but I will never ring you ever again. And I've not spoken to send me on the phone or anything because it wasn't that type of kind of partnership. But you're just a really good lad, a really, really good lad. I think, and the great thing is, what you saw was what you got, and no airs or graces, and just really nice, just a really nice kid.
Amazing.
Because yeah. He's held in such high regard, and we've just had a mural put on one of the neighbouring walls, and it kind
right,
of
so.
That sort of image.
Yeah,
that image there of him was the one that was at the derby when O'Grady scored.
Where the goal of the season was scored.
Stop it.
You played in that game, didn't you?
Yeah. I remember it being absolutely freezing. That's the only thing. And then I came off after an hour, which was kind of standard fare for me in my career. It's really cold gap I got to come off.
So I just want to pull into that, actually, because I ask a lot of the players that we have on this question, and it's one of them where when Hillsborough's rocking, we know that it helps the players. You know, we've asked a lot of pros, and when it's banging, when the crowd get on your back, when you hear that, and that whinge and that proper Yorkshire, not backward at coming forward, loud bit of feedback. Were you on the receiving end of that, or did you have somebody in the team that really used to get some crap from the crowd that used to think, Christ, I'm glad that's not me?
There was no one person. That collective can really suck the life out of a team. Can really suck the life out of a team. But do you know what? I mean, the other part of it is, it's a bit boring, but that sense of, because I get asked that a bit, and then you look at reactions of players to crowds, and maybe it's different if you get properly singled out, and it can be quite vindictive and personal, but dealing with that is part of the job. The performance side of what you do is being able to do that particular job in front of a lot of people, because that's what pays you the wages, and that's why you're a professional footballer. So you've got to take, or maybe something is inbuilt, or maybe something that's ingrained or educated into you, or maybe without sounding like I think I'm Christ Pelle or anything like that, but maybe you don't make it if you can't deal with that. Maybe there is an element of that. And there's a broader debate in this, without getting too deep about it, about what being a professional footballer can do to you as a human being. I'm not saying, you're not speaking to a secret mass murderer. This is not confessional with that at all. But you have to be really strong. Is strong the right word? Robust enough. Because you do, because you can have 20,000 people calling you every name under the sun, but you're not paid to react to that. You're paid to know what to do with the next ball that comes to you, or what decisions to make in real time on a football match. So you are kind of very dialed into that, and there's no greater feeling than that roar of a crowd. And because obviously we are talking about Wednesday, and we are talking about that kind of that ethos of what Hillsborough is. So you come out and hi-ho, Silver Lining comes on, and you just hear it, and you hear it, and you go, this is, it gets the hairs on the back of your neck. And it, but, and what it also does is, it, again, going back to the performative element of, it's kind of laser guides you into what you're doing. Right, now it's work, now it's, and it's a sport that we all love, but it's work for a professional footballer. You got, you pay to be as good as you possibly can be. So that's really does guide you in. And somewhere like Hillsborough, and I'm always very keen to stress this whenever I get the pleasure of being able to talk to proper Owls fans, is I played at Hillsborough with Forest. I remember scoring for Forest at Hillsborough a long, long time ago. Playing up into that way and up the hill, which when you're playing against it feels like that, and you're kind of climbing up it. But going back to growing up in Yorkshire and watching football as and when you could as a kid, and understanding what Hillsborough is historically, we all know what Hillsborough is and what's attached to Hillsborough. And then going there and being able to train on the pitch, moving up to the probably the back end of that season, maybe the season after as well. When you get into springtime, summertime, the weather's changed, hopefully, and you train on the pitch. It's a nice spring day, and you get to be able to take in what Hillsborough is quietly, and you look in the Leppins Lane end, and you see a section of seats that are marked out, and it, I remember vividly seeing it one time, beautiful summer's day, it just catches you, and you go, oh, Christ, yeah. And you don't need reminding because it's always there. If you've watched football and you're a certain age, you know exactly what Hillsborough is to a certain section of people. And it really does catch you. It's almost kind of, it's an eerie place when you're in there on your own and there's only 20 people kicking a football around and you can hear laughing, you can hear a slap of a football, you can hear a save of a shot. It just really does make you think. So then when you flip that round and then you go into what it is in a full match day where there's so much life and colour and vibrance, and being sat, as we were covering the Peterborough game, sat in that corner next to the Leppins Lane end, when that place was going ballistic, that real kind of divergence of what that place means to different people was so stark and vivid and moving in that sense. And obviously, I'm not trying to get too deep about what football means to people, but for a lot of us, it means everything, and it should absolutely mean everything. And to be able to play in that place, hear that place, stop being a building and become something that's a living kind of entity is has always been a real privilege and a pleasure of mine. To think that, as I said, and Stevie was saying, you come to Wednesday when they work good. You come to, it's not the Canyos Wednesday. It's not David Hurst Wednesday. It's not Des Walker's Wednesday. It's our ragtag Wednesday, but it still means as much to us as it did to them. And being able to be in that stadium when it is like that, I've always thought was a tremendous privilege, really.
That that season that you talk about, that you were there, you're right. Misfits is the best way of describing it. Yeah, because you were all just fumbling together. Mm. You know, we didn't know where we were as a club. You know, we did have the chairman issues that we had under Manderich, and then you know, Don Megson's lads in charge, and he was crap at West Brom, and for some reason he'd been via Forest and all this. And you're like, what is happening? Mm. How are we in League One again? How has this come around? What's gone off? And then there was something about that season for me that goes down as one of my favourites, because you know it's nice to cheer and win if I'm honest, you know what I mean. And but did you really feel the pressure to get promoted? Because there is an expectation from us as a fan base that we know we're not Premier League quality, and we've been out of that game for a while, but we know we're better than League One, but we keep ending up there somehow. Did you really feel that pressure when it came to a scrappy 1-0 win or trying to keep them out for the last 10 minutes? Is that palpable?
Yeah, definitely. And it has to be. And that's part, like I said, the pressure of, or the privilege of playing for a big club. It's not fighting around at the middle end of middle table of League One, is it? It's not kind of just getting by. It's about getting back. It's always about the journey back. And again, sorry to Wednesday fans listening to this, but the comparison with Leeds is very stark. It was a case of a big club in a division that they didn't want to be in. The novelty wears off after about half a season, doesn't it? Oh, we'll go there and we'll take this in. And then you go, Christ, I've had enough. Can we get back? Can we go up again? This is, we've had enough of this. And so there was a bit of that. There was a real difference when Mikel Antonio comes bouncing through the door. Mm-hmm. Before he started dressing like a Renaissance painter on Monday Night Football, he was he came in and he was as tactics go of rolling out to Mikhail and him running at one side of the pitch and either scoring or crossing in was great. Really simplified everyone else's job. And then going into that final game against Wickham at home, which, look it out, because I didn't start the game, I was on the bench, but looking out from the dugout and only seeing, and that was the first time, I don't know whether I'm trying to work, think if I've worked there since and it was full. So the little kind of cheese segment in the corner, which, I mean, I think is a safety hazard. So I don't know whether anyone's been in it there recently.
It's
just Wickham in the corner.
Taking the seats out now, So we wedged them all in there, didn't we?
Bless them. They're all like that, kind of holding on, trying to not slip down the stadium. And they were in there. The rest of it was Wednesday. And remember Dave Jones coming in and just kind of, obviously a completely different different rhythm to what Gary was. I'm not saying one's better than the other, just saying it's different. And he was very cool, calm, collected. And Terry Burton, his coach, an unbelievable coach, fantastic coach. I enjoyed so much of my time under him. Really good sessions. Bless him. Dave Jones took a couple. Terrible. You're going, wow, you are just not just a, you are a manager, you're not a coach. How's it going? Is he really what? All right, just get on with it. Let's get it done and dusted. And then going out into that last game of the season and it being very, very succinct. You win, you're up. That was it. You win, you're up. Mm-hmm. Akin to what we've seen in recent weeks with Derby on Saturday. You win, you're up. And it being a packed house and it being full and it just been a great day. Miguel Lera, there's a great picture of him on someone's shoulder. Oh, not someone because he's massive. Several people's shoulders. Gary Megson used to call him the big Spanish onion. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. I mean, either as a put down, as a nickname, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
of course, once he says it, everyone's like, well, that's your name now, but with his daft skull cap on. Jesus. But just being and just seeing that, I mean, there is always a tiny bit of a cynic in you that goes, if you don't start that game, is it yours? But then you go, hang on, it's a squad game. Christ, everyone's been there. When you hopefully chip in with the odd goal here and there, and you kind of contribute to what the dressing room is, and we all went up together, and it was just a great end to what was a wonderful season. Because of course the whole dynamic about Sheffield United, a lot of off the field stuff going on with them, which we shall get into, and that kind of looking like they were unassailable. So suddenly us going into a nice run of form, which took us beyond United, and just nicely nestled into automatic promotion, which, I mean, given what we've seen in the playoffs with Wednesday at times, I'm sure you were all very glad about that. It was a case of, let's just get it done normally, can we?
Oh, my God, so much.
In that Wickham game, I sit on the front row of the cop and the steward was like, you need to sit down. And I was like, I can't bend my legs. I can't sit down. I'm sorry, but I can't. And they were like, you need to I can't sit down. I cannot move.
Why would I sit down? This is amazing. Why must I sit down? Ridiculous.
Everybody was stood up.
It was ridiculous. And that must have been, how much does Hillsborough hold?
It used to hold 39,000, but we've had a few issues, you know, with SAG and whatnot. So it's kind of topping out at 33, 34 now.
33 the other day, wasn't it?
That would have been as full as it would have been in a long period before that, I think.
I'm gonna briefly Google it while you carry on, David. That's what I'll do.
Let's fill. I'm good at filling and padding out bits when people are finding out. It's normally when a pundit's trying to find a word and I'm going, just say the word, stop being a talk.
Well, while you do, I asked the women's supporters group if they had any questions for you. And universally...
So who is David Prutton?
Every single person asked if you regret getting rid of the hair.
Oh, right.
And if you're going to bring it back.
Well, I think once you start knocking on the door of your mid 40s, anything shoulder length, I mean, the beard's almost too much anyway, but I think shoulder length hair with it as well, possibly too much. But like, it was, I mean, Mego hated it. He was like, Jesus Christ. But it was a real, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I tried playing with long hair at Millwall. Jesus Christ, they do not like you down there if you've got shoulder.
They wouldn't let you back in Hull either, to be fair.
They would. No. I mean, come on, Polly. I was blazing a trail in Hull. I was I was like a really rubbish Kings of Leon before they were an actual thing. What it dates back to is I'm a massive Beatles fan. So my peak image of John Lennon is front cover Abbey Road, long, and obviously George has got the same band as well. I mean, he was probably so deep into quite a debilitating heroin addict that he had no idea what his barnet looked like, but yeah. I was like, that looks a business. I like that.
Yeah, I need that. Now, listen, I did Google it. It was 38,082 people, which is a mega turnout, which is why when I look back at those pictures, that is nearly 40,000 people. And like, when you think about that and playing in front of that many people, Bruce, that's got to be in your top five in terms of how many people were there. Because it's not like St. Mary's holds a lot of people. I know Ellen Road can hold I think that is there. Are they mid-40s, something along those lines?
But, yeah. I think 38,000. Got 42, I think. But the only time that was, I would think, getting towards capacity were playoff games at that in that first season I was there in League One. So, I mean, so you've got two huge clubs in League One there. Knocking on the door of 40,000 people for that type of thing is just utterly ridiculous. I was in the playoff final with Leeds at Wembley, so there was, by virtue of the fact that there's more seats, there were more people there. But again, we were crap. But that one, yeah, it's great that you said that because statistically that backs up what the memory is in the brain, walking out going, Jesus Christ, this place is full. And I haven't seen it very full, but properly full, to packed to the rafters. I mean, thank Christ we won. Stupid lot.
I tell you what, the only time I've ever known it to be full and we not get the desired result was when we went down into League One just prior to you being there, that 2-2 draw against Crystal Palace. They had the draw and it was a winner takes all stays in the league game and they got the draw. And you know, they had Darren Ambrose. They were actually better. And Darren Purse trying to keep up with him and all the lads knocking around. Steve, have you got any more? I feel like I've spoke for ages.
Do you know what? We've done loads of these, and tonight I've just sat here like a little fanboy, haven't I? It's been great. It's been great just listening. No.
Do you know what? I'll tell you something that's come up this week, which is final day coming up in the Championship. So I'm messing around with the charge cable. And so I get binned off to Scunning. Things are not going great, so I have to go off and kind of find my feet and see if I can get my way back. So spend 3 months in Scunning and then come back and it's not gone according to plan. So then suddenly Jones is talking to me in a slightly different way. It's kind of new eyes on an old player. Oh, maybe he's the answer. And I'm thinking, Christ, lads, if that's what you think, then you're in massive trouble here. But got chucked back into the side. And slowly but surely, I don't believe for one second that it was remotely what you call entertainment, but we were getting more and more solid. And then we go into the last game of the season against Borough, which is, again, you win. It's your survival in your own hands. Going into that, there was a woman I walked past in the car park after parking up. Big hug. Come on, mate. Today's our day. Make sure you do it. And just that little reminder that it's your job, but it's people's lives here as well. And so you go into the game. A Borough would have been kind of middling, but serviceable Championship side. So then as I'm talking this week about what you need to do on these final games, that first half an hour in that game was one of the most complete performances that I've ever been a part of. You had JJ that was playing like, I don't know, Pete Messi on one side of the pitch. We just, and I'd be intrigued if any of you can remember this as a spectator watching, but it was almost that classic, it's up to us to mess it up, and we absolutely did not mess it up. But football's always had a habit with me, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, of having a good time and coming around and volleying you in the knackers and going, oh god, I thought it was too good. But this was just great. We and by about 60 minutes in, sun was shining. I mean, Borough, bless them, they weren't really doing anything, but we could almost enjoy that. And it was so succinct a performance of putting things right after a terrible season that I think about it now, it really fills you with a lot of pride, because there was one job that you had to do and we did it completely. And then I've got pictures of that's the same picture. So whether you're Roy Keane and you think you don't do a lap of honour for avoiding relegation, I don't give a shit. You know what I mean? It was great. The connection with us and the fans was brilliant. I'm taking my kids on. My daughter was only thinking, my son's even smaller. She remembers it. He was only tiny. And you walk around and you give everyone a wave because you know what? You go, sorry, it's been testing. Sorry, it's been a trying season. Sorry, we weren't as good as we should have been, but you've been here all the time. So that's it's as much for us to go on and say thanks as it is for the fans to say thanks for not sending us through the trapdoor into League One. So that was that my end of season feeling with that was one of real pride in that. And then we came back for pre-season, and then as things happened, managers changed, Stuart Gray, who I've got a wonderful lot of time for. I ended up going away on loan to Coventry. And Stuart rang me, actually. And I mean, you don't go on loan, come to the end of your contract and expect to get a call from the manager going, it's a three-year deal, because obviously that was never going to happen. But he was lovely, and he said, I approached how you're getting on, great. Enjoy myself trying to get Coventry to some form of safety. Just wanted to catch up, keep you informed. You'll know by now that you're not going to get it. Yeah, absolutely fine, mate. Thanks for the call. Did it in such a classy way, and one that I'll always respect because he was a very, very good coach and a lovely fella. And when I bumped into him on the circuit since, he's been great. But then that then kind of comes to an end. You end up going to Coventry, where I was working with Stephen Presley. Yeah, we'll get safe. We'll get your contract. That didn't come to fruition. Didn't hear from him for ages. About 5 or 6 years later in a hotel in Brentford where his son played, about getting on Sky. I was like, yeah, of course I'm going to get you on Sky after not giving you contracts at Coventry. Said with tongue in cheek, of course. And then kind of my memory of how it started career-wise, how it finished, was barring the little spell at Coventry where we managed to save him from going into League Two, mine kind of knits together with being at Wednesday when we managed to pull our fingers out and not get the club relegated, and then jumped up, landed on Semedo's foot, rocked my ankle, knackered my ankle. Brilliant. Then next minute I'm at Coventry. So it's the highs and the lows. And it's literally sent to Coventry. And the bit that I remember vividly from that was driving down. My mate had seen it on the ticker on Sky Sports News, one of many people that had moved on the same day. And he went, oh, you're off to Coventry? He said, yeah. He said, they're still playing at Northampton. I went, oh, Christ, they are, aren't
they? Yeah, oh, God, yeah. That's like an hour and a half. That's
and I mean, I think in the whole time that I was at Coventry, I never went to Coventry. Even the training ground, which is outside of Coventry, kind of near Warwick or Northampton. So that's how it kind of petered out. But it was, that last real high point was definitely a Wednesday, and definitely going back there, working as we do, it's just been a pleasure. I remember the playoff game against Brighton, Forestieri. Mm-hmm. I remember and being at the playoff final, and it being such a kind of galling feeling. Obviously, you've got Hull City there, the city that I'm from, against Wednesday, a team that I love, and Hull kind of turning up, casually doing a job and going home. You're like, oh, Jesus. I mean, the Wednesday have been here for ages. I mean, they'd have had the best, they'd ripped Wembley to pieces in the best possible way. And then seeing the semi-final last season, that, again, like I said, having been in that stadium when it's been, as you say, 38,000 people, I've never seen anything like that. You go into it thinking, and we're looking at it from a narrative point of view and a script point of view, and we're all kind of going, we hope it happens, but Christ, come on, it's not. And then it starts, and then it goes, then it goes. And then by the end, we were on air with Aaron McLean and Clinton. Christ, I mean, I wonder what Clinton's... Oh, no, he's on every single Sky channel that you've ever seen on every game that you could possibly cover. And we just sat there at the end as the slowly turning the floodlights up and the lights, just thinking, this is the greatest game on the planet. And this is just literally reaffirmed why this is the greatest game on the planet. And then seeing everyone at the playoff final, and seeing how that panned out was just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And fingers crossed, we're not far from it now. Without tempting fate, every chance.
Hell of a chance, isn't it? I mean, like, it's been a year. You know, next month it's been a year since those games. And I was saying last week that I'm still hungover from it now. You know what I mean? It's still. But listen, I'm just before I wrap this up, I'm going to get a bit nerdy on you. I'm going to get a bit nerdy on it. Was the career that you're doing now, was that something that you fancied late, you know, in your mid-20s, late-20s, and thought, what learning did you do for it, or was it just something that just came naturally to you? Because, you know, being a host and being a presenter, there's a lot more nuances to it than people give you credit for.
Yeah.
Was that something you had to learn? Was that something you had to take on board, or are you just normally a gobby knobhead?
A gobby knobhead, I like that.
Yeah.
There is a bit of that. I mean, as you can probably tell from this, and apologies for hijacking it, I don't mind talking. It was something that I enjoyed doing. I love speaking to the media. There's a game that I did for Sky, which was Wednesday Leeds when I was injured at Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I was the guest for it. And I since heard latterly that somebody watching quite high up was quite not impressed, because that makes you sound like a dickhead. And I could do that without saying stuff like that. Yeah, it comes naturally. It's weird. Yeah. But it went all right, and obviously didn't offend anyone. So then it came to finishing my career, and as I said, came out of Coventry. I'd literally nowhere to go. The best offer that I had was going on trial at Hartlepool.
On trial.
And I was kind of like, Christ. Which to a lot of people that have never played football professionally would go, Christ, that's amazing. But you're kind of going, don't know. And so I had a couple of contacts and a foot in the door. You approach what I've done is the same as you do as you're a footballer. You turn up, you're prepped, you're bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. You're not a dick to work with, hopefully. And then you kind of just keep pushing the doors that are in front of you. And it, timing-wise, was probably good. I think the fact, possibly as well, that I talk about pre and post pushing a referee and kind of not getting back to the Premier League probably helps, because then I can talk about a lot of things, and there's a lot of things that I've experienced, a lot of different clubs that I play for that I've experienced in all different levels. So there's a bit of that that comes into it. So it started off being a pundit, which I think is an awful word, and then a co-commentator, which I still do a lot of. And then the chance comes through a bit of luck and coincidence and happenstance, and said, do you want to have a go at presenting? And my answer to a lot of things is yes, yep, no worries. You say yes, then you work back and think, Christ, I don't know how you do this. So you ask the right people and hopefully you get the right feedback. And then what I always said to them early on was, being a footballer, going back to playing in front of crowds, you know when you're good and you know when you're crap, because when they're good, people clap. When you're crap, people boo. So I said, well, tell me what's crap and I'll stop doing it. Tell me what you like and I'll try and do more of that. And just give me that. So from a training point of view, it was only ever asking people what they liked and what they wanted to hear and how to go about it. There was never any kind of... I've since done a diploma, a journalist diploma, which is more to do with the kind of nuts and bolts of how you go about stories and chasing up stories and the legalities of that. And some of it's terrifying, because you think, Christ, the most flippant comic could get you quite seriously in trouble in court, can it? So maybe dial it down. But it was more to do with being in the right place at the right time, but then hopefully having a modicum of something that helps you through that. And then really working on it, because what I found, and the people that you work with that are really, really good, that I found, they are very natural, but they've had to work hard to be natural. I don't think right out the gate, and I use this, and it almost sounds a bit kind of like you're taking the piss a bit, but Des Lynam, we all know what Des Lynam is, who he is, what he's done, but to get boring about it, as you said, Dan, talk about the fundamentals. As a broadcaster, utterly peerless, calm under pressure, delivery's great, intonation's great, cadence, the rhythm of his chat is great. But there's training there, there's working at that to become that. And then you've got to kind of hopefully bring people in with a bit of warmth and a bit of consideration. Yes, I play football, but I'm more than happy to sit myself on the sidelines with the fans and go, look at these, look, these are really good. I mean, look at it, what he's putting in. Yeah, I'm more than happy to do that, because you kind of know where you stand. And then after that, it's like I said, it's hopefully keeping your face in the right place and not pissing important people off and staying out of trouble. All I can say is, sorry to put in again, it's a pleasure and a privilege, and to be able to do this off the back of playing football has just been...
It's a hell of a gig, Brooke, to be fair. Yeah. Like, you're going to be the face of the EFL for a number of years to come. You're going to be like EFL.
Get yourselves promoted. You're fine. I say this to, if you get a bit of whatever on Twitter or Forest fans had a bee in the bonnet about me for a bit because apparently once or twice I said they might not win a football match. I mean, that's terrible, isn't it? So my main take on that was, if you're that arsed about it, get promoted. I'm nowhere near the Premier League. That's just the way it goes. But yeah, it's been a promo that we've been doing for the last month or so. We're doing four times as many games next season. There's over 1,000 live games and all the Carabao Cups. So, sorry, unless I do something really silly, you're stuck with me.
So to wrap that up, just to let you know, Putz, I am available. I only live down the road now as well from the stadium, studio.
Yes.
So give me a shout. It's just on the way out of London.
Emigrated down south with all those weird. How are you finding it down there?
Expensive. £7 a pint now. So you know what I mean? We're not booking.
You get that in Harrogate too now, though. Christ.
How much?
That's a round and a curry in Sheffield, isn't it?
Holly was telling me you can get like three Jaeger bombs for a tenner, and I'm like, where she is, and I'm like, it's one for a tenner, there's no change. Yeah, get out of it. Jaeger bomb. We drink reposado round here. Oh,
reposado. Yeah, Christ. Yeah. What threw me the other week? We were down in London for half term, and this is the last boring old man story I'll say was in. We were watching a couple of the internationals, my wife, my son, and so I was watching Wales playing because Jack Lester, big friend of mine, ex Blade, sorry again for mentioning the Blade, but he, on the coaching staff there, Alan Neil, again, Blade's coaching legend, and hoping that they get through. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But you went to the bar to get a drink, which was literally the bar. Mm-hmm. Pun apart, there you go. Pun apart. It's however extortionate amount it was. Option to put a tip on. So yeah. I don't want to sound like that person, but I mean, other than doing that, which is what you hear,
it's the worst one. There's a pie place. There's a chain that sells pies and cider. I can't remember what it's called. It's The Stable, right? If you've ever been to one of them, and they built one in Southampton, just outside Guildhall Square, right?
Yes.
And you go up there, and they went, you have to go up to the bar yourself, right?
They're waiting to come to the table.
Yeah, to order. And then they go, here you are, that'll be £20 or whatever. And then they turn around the PDQ machine and it says, would you like to leave a tip?
What? And look at you, don't they? Like,
What the fuck for? Like, what? Well, I've done all the work here, bro. You've got up off your stool that you were leaning on playing Clash of Clans.
Can I ask you for a tip?
Innit?
How does that work?
You're welcome. Am I going to get cash back? Am I going to get taken off the bill here? Bloody hellfire. But listen, the
thing is, you get to Roy Keane territory today. He's just doing his job.
He's just doing what? That's doing his job, to get me the pie, the cider, and the pies. Now, I'm going to wrap this up anyway. Right. It's been an hour. Listen, Prutz, you've been an absolute star. Thank you so much for staying with us. And, well, thank you for everything you did in the blue and white. See you later.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Johnson puts it in the air. Aidan Flint wins the goal! It's the
It's still with Lee Gregory. He's in the box. Tries to screw him. Is it going to be there?
Yes! Yes!
Oh, my God!
The Wednesday week!
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing, ready to go. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Back of the net, Lubosch. Ultimate delivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.